vegan market, Bucky's birthday party? Freaking miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. And like always, Abracadamits, I hope you're getting stuff done, son, meeting them goals. It has been an interesting week for the whole country. The whole world, I guess. After the whole Oscars that no one was watching. But I didn't even want to get into that. Because now I'm so sick of the Chris and Will jokes. I think that shit's worse than COVID now. So, I do want to apologize, guys, because normally I do put the episodes out on Friday, but I was on the road all day yesterday, had to go do some media for an upcoming show, and so I didn't get in till later, and I was unable to get the episode out, so I do apologize, but we are out today. Anyways, that being said, let's give a big shout out to the sponsor and we'll get this episode rolling. Okay. Well, today's episode is brought to you by Rosie Tattoos. Custom tattoos designed to suit your style in a friendly and clean environment. I've been getting my tattoos done by Rosie for a while now, and I couldn't recommend anyone else because she does excellent work. As a matter of fact, I got an appointment to see Rosie here in just a few weeks, and I cannot wait to get my ink therapy done, baby. Rosie gets free consultations by Facebook Messenger, Instagram, or by email. Shoot her an email at rosietattoos@yahoo.com. Give Rosie a call today at 865-281-3451 or go see Rosie at 5710 Kingston Pike, Knoxville, Tennessee. Get your ink therapy done. You know you want a tattoo. Go see Rosie Tattoos. All right, Abracadamits. Now, today's guest is somebody who I really enjoy talking with. He's a hilarious stand-up comic, and he's got a high comedy IQ based off my conversation with him. very knowledgeable, and he should be because he actually teaches comedy classes there in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is an amazing thing, especially for people who are first getting into comedy and need some type of guidance. So if you will, Abracadamits, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with stand-up comedian Don Garrett. All right, I'm excited. We got stand-up comedian Don Garrett here on the Abracadam Podcast. How you doing, Don?
I'm pretty good, sir. How about yourself?
Doing good, man. Can't complain. Been watching some of this March Madness. I don't know if you're a basketball fan or not, but it's been...
Yeah, I am, man. I almost got kicked out of a restaurant yesterday during the UNC-Baylor game.
That's funny. But the... my Vols lost yesterday.
Sorry about that.
It was heartbreaking, but hey, I'm proud of them because they won the SEC championship this year. First time I was 1 year old the last time that happened, so
wow.
I'm really, really, really proud of them. But I tell you what, let's do this. If you don't mind, Don, go ahead and introduce yourself to the Abracadam listeners.
Hey, what's up, Abracadam people? My name is comedian Don Garrett, coming to you from the Queen City, Charlotte, North Carolina. I want to thank Danny for having me today. I really appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Hey, man, dude, I'm glad you are on. And, dude, you are a very funny man, Mr. Don Garrett.
Thank you.
He is a very funny man. You bring the charm on stage because I watch some of your sets and I'm like, you know, I like this dude. So
Thank you, sir.
Don could sit there and probably insult you and you'd still like him. He's got that kind of charm on stage. Well, let me ask you, man, let's hear about your stand-up. How long you been slinging them jokes, man, and kind of what got you into it, brother?
Yeah, for sure, man. So this year will make 5 years that I've been slinging them jokes. So June 26th will be my anniversary. And pretty much what got me into it, I'm originally from Virginia. Shout out to the Old Dominion State, you know, my people. And it was Memorial Day of 2015, and I was at my friend John Alina's home. And alcohol may or may not have been involved at this Memorial Day gathering. I'm just saying I'm incriminating myself. But So I was just in the kitchen, man, and just cutting up. And they're like, man, you need to go do comedy. And I'm just like, I don't got no jokes. I don't got no material. I can't go do comedy. And fast forward, I moved to Charlotte. in that same year, in December of 2015, just a sudden, moved, didn't know I was going to get a job and moved to Charlotte. And as I was working, I had coworkers telling me the same thing, you need to do stand up. And I took that advice and I haven't looked back since.
Yo, man. Okay. First of all, now you said you've been at 5 years. I've heard, I don't even know if this is true because it may take some people longer, some people sometimes shorter, but they usually say it takes about 5 to 6 years before you find your voice in comedy.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, that's kind of what it did for me. I was about around that whenever I figured out who I am, how do I do what I want to do, and, you know, my voice. But, you know, some people, I guess it's kind of different. And then there's some people, you know, you know how it goes.
Oh yeah, of course.
but then also the thing you said that you had friends tell you, oh man, you should do stand up. Now let's throw this out here too. This is a disclaimer. Guys, just because you're funny in front of your friends now, that don't mean you're going to be funny in front of total strangers. So
that is very much correct. So that is so true.
Let's hear that. So what was that first open mic like? What was that like?
Whoa, man. The first open mic actually was at a place called Eagle Speak. That's no longer open, but I love that place, man. Love doing my open mic days there. Bob Meyer was the host, man, and it was weird, but it was interesting because that's when I started to meet comedians, and you know, I started to really check out the Charlotte underground comedy scene here, and you know, I started to meet people I'd never seen in this city, and I started to really just see them in different mics and different places and become friends with them and, you know, write with them sometimes and stuff. So just the metamorphosis of that whole process was just amazing. You know, Eagle Speak was such a warm, comfy place, and it was a very inviting mic. So I will forever love it.
See, that's awesome, too, especially when it's a real an inviting atmosphere.
Yeah, for sure.
The new guy don't walk in and you get those looks and those whispers. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still got those. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong, Danny. I still got those. But just I got way more, you know, just love and acceptance from everybody else, which, you know, which was what I wanted to focus on and embrace. So it was good. But no, yeah, I still got those. Yeah.
How did your set go?
Oh, man. So the set, you know what? So during my class graduation, they did say that would be the best crowd I would ever see. They didn't lie, right? And just the open mic, the first set was me telling my jokes. And I'm like, wait a minute, this stuff just worked. They laughed. And they were just kind of looking at me like crickets waiting to chirp. And I didn't know how to take it, man. But I got off stage and I regrouped. And I was just like, wait a minute. And I started to realize that, you know, as I started to perform more, I realized that, you know, it's not necessarily funny, but typically when you're in an open mic, you got mostly comics there as your audience, and they're not necessarily paying attention because they're working on their own bits to get on stage and try to get out. And so I learned very quickly how to, you know, kind of decipher, you know, the two. And, you know, I realized that if I got even the smallest bit of a reaction in that room from comics that weren't paying attention, that was probably a bit that I could keep.
Absolutely. And that is so true, man. That is true 100%. Is when, especially whenever you've been attending the same open mic and even especially when they get to know you, other comics know you, you know. So open mics are good for voicing out the joke and working it out, yeah. But it's really difficult to tell by the reactions because, you know, different rooms, you're going to get different reactions. Nothing against open mics at all. It's just that these days I very seldom ever go to an open mic. It's like when I write a new bit, what I do is I cram it in between my old stuff. That way, if it don't do good, well, we can just roll on. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yep. So, exactly. Same here. And plus, you know, producing shows and hosting the shows that I produce, that's kind of like the open mic time there as well too. You know, and absolutely. So I use that time most of the time. If I'm hosting, I'm riffing, but sometimes if I have a bit I want to try, I'll find a way to work it in there somewhere and try that because it's a live audience, and that's hosting is kind of like my open mic time.
You know, I tell this story a lot, but the last open mic I went to was a few years ago, And I was like, because I had this corporate gig coming up, and I was like, man, I want to test out some of these new bits, but I got to say them, I got to get them out. So I'm gonna go down to this open mic, and I'm gonna voice some of that, you know. So anyways, man, I show up with my open, you know, new jokes, everything, and the host was like, and we got a treat today. We got Danny Whitson's here. He's gonna close out the show. You know, and it was all like a big deal. I was like, no, no.
Yeah, right. Yo,
new stuff. Don't do that. No.
Whoa, bro.
So I was like, dang, man, dude. So, you know, it was, but it turned out okay. But I was like, man, that could have been disastrous. Cause
yeah, exactly. That could have went way left, bro. way left.
I was like, no. But, I mean, and you know, man, you talk about the process, dude. There's such a process with comedy when you look back. And, because when you mentioned like with the open mic, you know, that's comics. Most of them are all, they're writing their jokes. They really don't give a damn what you're saying up there. Or you might get your buddy back there, that one supportive comic that loves to laugh at everybody's stuff. And he'll force that laugh. You know, that fake laugh.
Yeah.
You know, that guy. But then as the process goes on, though, you got to learn how to play that room, you know, mm-hmm. Do the show that's in front of you, not the show in your head.
Exactly.
So
exactly. Living within the moment, you know, the further you go in this comedy thing, the longer you perform, you learn how to diagnose the room. And so, you know, you can kind of look around and see what's going on and find some kind of common ground with your set. Me personally, myself and my good friend Evan Pitfield, we always talk about our sets and how when we get on stage, we never really jump right into the jokes. We diagnose the room. We assess the situation. We check the temperature to kind of see how everything flies out. We had a show in Bristol, Tennessee, the other night at the Blue Ridge Comedy Club. Shout out to Blue Ridge and the city of Bristol, Tennessee, and Virginia. And
I love Bristol.
Bristol's amazing. It's Bristol, baby. but we had a great time, but you know, there were things that I was picking up as I was in town and I wanted to go and talk to the crowd about it because, when I'm doing shows, I like to connect with the crowds by talking about something that you know about.
Absolutely.
Something that you can relate to, something that's in front of you every day. And for me to come into your town and talk to you about it, automatically you're just like, oh, okay, who is this guy? And how did he come up with all of, and boom, here we are.
You know, absolutely. 100%, dude. Every town I go to, I try to find something that I can talk about on stage about that town. Because that's one thing that you want to relate to your audience, and you are 100% correct. Now, I was, when I was at the Stardome, okay, I don't know if you've ever drove through Alabama, but they've got like,
yeah.
You get to a point to where you see a billboard for this attorney, Alexander Shamanalala, every 5
yeah, miles. Yeah. I've seen him. I've seen that guy.
And I was like, man, dude. So I went up there and, you know, I did a callback to that dude and it just killed, you know.
Blew him up, didn't it? Blew him up.
Because, I mean, that's smart to do because, you know, the name of the game also is if you relate to your audience, they're going to like you. And if they're going to like you, they're going to laugh.
Exactly. And if they're going to laugh, they're going to buy merch in the whole 9 absolutely. Yards, brother. Whole 9 yards.
Absolutely. You know the game, man. Absolutely.
Yes, student of it, man, Danny. Student of it, man. Try to study it as much as I can. And I've been around so many greats that have just, you know, lent me jewels that have given me so much game, man, that they don't even know what they've done for me in my short 5 years of comedy. So I'm blessed, man, to be around so many OGs, man.
And, you know, that never stops either because, you know, just I even tell people, like, you know, I never have a masterpiece. It's always evolving, always growing, always something. And
yes, sir.
And if you keep your ears open, you will be in, you know, and keep your ego out the way. You will learn from
thank
people
you.
Who you would never even think you'd ever learn from.
Man, put your head down, keep your eyes open, your ears open, listen, look, see, absorb as much as you can because, man, this is a marathon. If anybody is getting into this comedy thing thinking it's a sprint, you have another thing coming, you know. You got to be built for the long haul, man, and it's going to be a lot of lonely nights with this, Danny, you know, man. So, but, you know, this is – you know, this is if you're still in it at a certain point in time, then yeah, this is probably what you're supposed to be doing. So, you know, I never take that for granted.
You know, and I tell people that too. I said, you know, there's going to be people right now, like you hear, you know, I don't involve myself in any of the comedy high school drama stuff, but every scene has.
No, right.
And I tell these people if they ever bring, you know, come to me and stuff, and I'm like, man, some of these people 5 years from now, they ain't even going to be doing this. They're going to.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't just focus on you and move forward. Now, what you're doing, though, is you're doing something that's awesome for the scene because there's a lot of comics start out. I'm a fan of structure. I'm a fan of a process. The process exists for a reason. It really does.
Right.
There may be times like, you know, I always tell people whenever I started out emceeing at the club that we had to be 100% clean when we emceed.
Mm-hmm.
It don't matter if we was opening for the most filthiest headliner in the world. We had to clean. Be clean. And I had to, back in the day, I used to be, man, I hate this. You know, I used to get so mad. And but now I look back and I'm like, wow, that was one of the best things that I ever had to adjust and learn how to do, you know? So
yeah,
that's why I tell people the process is there for a reason and it is important even whenever it feels like it's bad, you know? And I'm not just going to say that in comedy, but I think that's in all things in life, you know?
Oh, of course. Of course. Definitely so. With all things in life, you know, I always liken comedy to playing a sport. Kobe Bryant, rest in peace, it will always be my favorite basketball player, you know? And, you know, comedy is you can have a raw talent just like with athletics. You can have a raw talent, but until you get coached correctly, until you learn the fundamentals of the game, you can't be 100% effective. I mean, you know, hard work does beat talent, but if you can put that hard work aspect to the talent, geez, man, do you know what you can do?
Oh, yeah. Well, and see, and that's kind of what you're doing there in Charlotte, right? You're doing, like, you're part of the stand-up class, correct, that they're doing for the
Yes, sir. Yes, so sir. Yes, sir.
Let's hear about that. How did you get in that? And tell me, how does that work? Tell me.
Well, it's amazing, man. So, you know, of course, unfortunately, we had a pandemic that, you know, we're kind of, you know, pretty much coming out of right now. And the Charlotte Comedy Theater was reopening. And so I had spoken with, I call her Auntie Lee, but there's a comedian in Charlotte. Her name is Lee Gannon. And Lee messaged me and she said, you know, how would you feel about teaching, you know, a comedy class? And man, before I could even really think about it, Danny, I was like, I'd love to. It just came out. And the next thing I know, I was at the Charlotte Comedy Theater meeting with the amazing Kelly Simmelsberger, who is the founder, organizer, director. She is literally the heartbeat and soul of that place. Kelly does everything, and she's amazing at what she does. Meeting with Kelly, and we, you know, chatted. We talked about the class times. You know, I sent over, you know, pretty much the curriculum, how things would go, the structure of the class. And the next thing I know, we were live on Eventbrite.
Nice.
And we got the first class that came in. We had four students, so they were like the guinea pigs. And you know, we had class, and it was that 6 weeks. Just it amazed me, that first 6 weeks, just watching them go from just ordinary, you know, regular civilians to traveling, coming over to the dark side of comedy. And we had their graduation ceremony, and just it was about 80 plus people there, just, you know, supporting. And it was just a moment that, you know, I just kind of had to take in, man, just knowing that, you know, we were building something special. So now we're on our third class, our graduation's in a few weeks. So it's been an amazing journey thus far, and I'm just looking forward to everything that's going to be coming with it.
Now, so how does the process, so I'm assuming, like, how long did you say that the classes are? How long is the course?
So the class is 6 weeks. The class is 6 weeks. So in the beginning, you know, for about the first 2 weeks or so, we pretty much just go over kind of getting familiar with thinking and comfortable with thinking like a stand-up comedian, with, you know, becoming familiar with different, say, terms, or, you know, watching, you know, film or something like that. And then in the final few weeks, we work on constructing their sets. And at the end of that, there's a graduation ceremony in which they come and perform their set in front of their friends, you know, family and friends that come out.
Oh, okay, that's super cool. Super cool. So right. they get that family and friend, you know. And I was talking about that, you know, that's one of the crazy things that people don't understand about comedy, is especially whenever you first starting out, you getting all your family and friends to come see me because I got
yeah
to
right
come
right
see me, you know, and yeah. you suck, you know what I mean, and then they walk away.
It's inevitable. Like, it's inevitable.
He should have never got into this. This is and then never come back and ever see you again.
Exactly.
So that,
exactly. Even if you get good, they're not coming back, man.
Yeah, yeah. You can have your Netflix special and be like, I don't know how he got that.
Yeah, I'm not gonna watch it. I'm not gonna watch it.
But no, that's awesome, man, because we've got something similar like that here in Knoxville. Stand-up comedian Alex Stokes, he teaches a stand-up class at the University of Tennessee.
Cool.
And, yeah, he will have get students and stuff signed up. And I know he has gotten some guys, and you know, when I say guys, I mean guys and girls. It's a universal term. But he's gotten folks into comedy that way. And I think that's great, you know, really I do. Unfortunately, we don't have a club in Knoxville anymore. And like I said, so you'll get some comics that'll start out and they, I'm not knocking anybody who only does, you know, stage time in bars. But I mean, when you can hop up and there's too much freedom or not really a process, it can be tough to learn some things that way. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, for sure. And that's where that structure comes in that you were talking about earlier. You know, there are different tiers of shows, as we know. You have your bar shows, you have your club shows, you know, you have your theater shows, you have your private events, you have like a little bit of everything, outside domes, you name it. So, you know, as a performer, you have to know how to be versatile in all of those environments, and you have to experience all of those environments to become versatile in them. So thankfully I've had a chance to experience a lot of those environments just here in Charlotte, and say for those bar, you know, settings and segments, they tend to be a little bit more loose and things, and you know, you kind of have to grab the crowd by the collar, you know, to make them listen.
Yeah.
And so maybe I go in and maybe I'm more riffing that night. Maybe we're just talking to people. Maybe we're just fishing. Maybe we're just, you know, creating a wave throughout the crowd. Now, of course, at a theater show or, you know, a club show, they're there for comedy. Run your set, you know. You got to know what to do in all those situations. And I mean, yeah, you get stage time, say, in a place that has only bar atmospheres, but then you only see that. So when you get to a club or theater, it's not going to go well because you don't know what to do.
And, you know, I'll be the first to say, I think club shows are the funnest shows.
Yeah.
Because people are there to see that product that you're selling. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
The probably one of the least, I don't do a lot of, now I don't associate it. People may do this, but I don't really associate the brewery shows with bar shows because
they're different.
Yeah, they are different. And brewery shows are fun, man. Absolutely.
Man, I love them.
I love them, man. I absolutely love them. They're becoming a hot thing now too. I love doing them. People are there. I don't do yet many dive bar shows these days. And luckily I'm in a place to where I can say, no, I don't want to do that venue.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah, for sure.
I'll tell you this, the corporate shows, they pay the best, but boy, they're not always that fun. And
no, of course not. Now that you have like the audiences don't engage, you know, of course, when we were doing virtual shows heavily, I did one, you know, virtual show, man, and you know, they had to tell the residents, they were like, hey, you know, you guys, it's okay to take your, you know, your computers off of mute and laugh and interact and stuff, and it's just like you're performing the screens, man. But those same, but I tell you what was good about those virtual shows, Danny, they got my timing better. Because sometimes I'd had to wait for, I'd say the punchline and I can hear it in my headphones and I know it's a lag. So I have to wait until they get it and then they laugh. And now on stage, now I'm not stepping on my laughs.
That's absolutely great. And you know, I do the same thing and I don't ever want to step on my laughs, and I always do. This is only comics will get this, you know what I mean? But when I tell that joke, boom, there's that laughter, and I almost got like a little clock in my head that I'm counting for that wave to come down at a certain
come point. Come down right before you punch it right back up.
Exactly. It's like surfing. I had a, he's like me. He's a stand-up comedy magician, Nick Lewin. He's a legend, by the way.
Yeah,
Nick is
yeah.
a legend. And that's what Nick said. He said, you know, comedy is like surfing. He goes, you want to keep riding that wave. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Of course.
Those virtual shows, I did some, cause I, you know, I had written some new jokes and I was like, man, I got to voice these out. I got to voice them out. And, somehow I got connected with Dat Fan from, Last Comic Standing. The very first
one. Yeah.
That was doing these virtual shows. And he texts me, he's like, hey man, you wanna do this, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, dude, I'll do it. You know, I mean, so I'm doing these, it's a virtual open mic. And it was cool to get a chance to voice out the joke. But at the same time, dude, because Dad also had a rule. He's like, you can't leave. Once you do your set, you got to sit there and listen to everybody else.
Yeah, that's respecting. Hey, no logging out.
But I mean, I'm grateful. I'm glad that he did that because, you know, it gave, you know, an opportunity to test out some jokes and stuff. But that was definitely the corporate shows. I did a few of those. And my challenge is I don't, because like a lot of magicians, whenever the virtual thing, a lot of them went straight and everybody was doing mentalism because we don't have to pick a card. There's no interaction. I can just read your mind, you know. And see me, To me, I don't like doing anything if I don't feel creatively challenged. So
yeah.
I was like, I got to be, how can I take my show? Because my show's in your face. There's gags. There's stand-up. Everything, a lot of things happen. So there's one bit that I did, and I'm proud of this. I don't get to do it no more, but I'm proud of this. So I gotta tug my own horn here real quick.
Yeah.
There's a gag I do on my show where I throw a hammer at somebody in the audience. All right? Yeah, you ain't sleeping at this show. Here we go. And anyways, I was like, man, how can I do this on a virtual? How can I get these attention? Because dudes over here, like, you know, got me on mute, not paying it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm like, man, let me do this. So I do the same gag. I've got the hammer and I'm talking with it and it slips out of my hands and it hits the camera and breaks the camera. So we're in the middle of doing the show. I throw the hammer, shatters the camera screen, and everybody loses their mind because this lady just paid me a lot of money to entertain all these people at her work. And she's like, oh no. And I'm like, oh no. And I'm like, I know. And I said, that's why I got this tape on here. And it was just a piece of tape that I had.
Oh.
But I mean, I was like, this is how I can at least have some fun doing this. You know,
Yeah, and that's a good way to get them engaged right off the bat, too, man.
Exactly. So I was trying to figure out a way how to literally break that screen and reach out to them. I don't think virtual shows are necessarily ever going to go away, but they're not going to be as long as we continue and learn how to live with COVID, because it ain't going away either. You know what I mean?
No, it's going to be just like the flu, man. It's going to be such a common thing that, you know, it's going to be super common, man. It's nothing. Nobody's going to think anything of it. And as long as there's live entertainment, like you said, that's always going to trump virtual. People are always going to come out, if not for just the entertainment, for the experience.
Yeah. Live is, so, and you know as well as I do, you can't, there's nothing that can replace that energy of other human beings in the same room, and it just
flows. Exactly. Exactly. You can't. That's organic, man. That's organic chemistry.
Yeah. It's not going away. Now, I do think corporations will look at virtual entertainment as an option, you know?
Yeah. I've seen that they have. There's kind of been an uptick in it because they're now, you know, looking at comedy and improv, like stand-up and improv, kind of as like an icebreaker for meetings or, you know, for events and things like that. So they're doing more things for, you know, employee engagement and morale, especially for employees that, you know, have been at home for a whole pandemic and couldn't go into the office and see anybody. You know, so I have seen where corporations are trying that as a means to, you know, boost employee morale.
Now, well, let me ask you this on comedy. You know, I ask a lot of comics this, and I get asked this too all the time. But who was your big influence? Who do you look at today?
So my big influence, man, there are actually two comedians that, you know, I look at as influential. The first is Dave Chappelle. In my mind and in my eyes, he's the GOAT, man. And you know, watching his specials, he found a way to, even with historical events, a way to break it down to the simplest form to which anybody can laugh at it. You know, the man gave us a punchline, gave us a joke. We forgot about the punchline, and he socked us in the mouth with it. That's genius level, you know. And then the other influence is Kevin Hart. And I'll say that because Kevin Hart transcended the game. He took social media and showed you how powerful social media can be. And the way that he has constantly reinvented himself to reach audiences from kids to senior citizens, there's not a market that he cannot, you know, zoom in and out of, man. Marketability is his, he is a beast. So looking at it, you know, from a strictly funny perspective, not saying Kevin's not, but from a strictly funny perspective, it's Dave. But when I think about, like, as far as, like, the business of stand-up comedy, Kevin Hart.
You know, I have to agree. Dave Chappelle, and, I mean, I look at a lot of old-school comics. I really do. And I have my favorites. But I think right now Dave Chappelle absolutely, he's in that argument. He's in the argument of the GOAT. And it's, I mean, he's got his own style, everything, and his writing and the way he brings it. Some of his specials, I mean, the specials that he's cranked out just in the last, what, five, six years, yep. You know, I've got my favorite ones, you know what I mean? And how he handled the Bill Cosby topic, even how he handled that, I thought, damn, that was brilliant. The way you brought it back, that was brilliant. You know, and then his last special, anybody who wanted to criticize Dave Chappelle without watching his special, shut up. You know what I mean?
And I said the same thing. I mean, you have to look at the special and listen to it for yourself. And anybody who listened to the special, I mean, anybody who listens to the special and listened to it for content, for actual, like, what he was trying, the message that he's conveying, you wouldn't have had an issue with that. Now, you may not have agreed with how he did it or the content that he talked about in regards to it, but his overall message was a positive one. And that's where the gift of discernment comes in.
And I mean, you know, it's, dude, God, it's funny though, okay? I mean,
For sure.
Just like, I mean, I laughed. I'm sorry, but I laughed at he talked about, it was with the COVID. You know, he talked about COVID and he talked about African-American people beating up Asian people. That's kind of like what's going on inside my body when I had COVID.
Dude, the way he just brought it, the way he brought it back to, like, just to make it relevant, man. To make it relevant, you know?
Yes.
To make it relevant. If you're just listening to it for him talking about, you know, blacks and Asians, then you're just like, oh, okay, well, that may be racist. But man, no. Here's the joke.
Yeah.
He's talking about what COVID is doing to his cells inside his body.
Yeah. And people know Dave Chappelle's married to an Asian.
His wife's Filipino.
Yeah. So is mine. So there we go, Dave. Me and you.
There you go.
And this is the thing with Kevin Hart. Okay. I do like Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart is probably one of the most hustling, hardest working people who's got to where he is. And I'm going to say this too. The reason why Kevin Hart had to work extra hard, and this is something no one talks about. They joke about it a lot. And now, granted, anytime a short guy complains, now notice this, anytime a short guy complains, he's got little man syndrome. That's his problem. He's got a little, that's messed up. But here's the thing: a short man has to work his ass off to be recognized up top. So Kevin Hart has worked extremely hard to be where he is. You know what I mean?
That's a fact.
So from another short dude, hey, there we go.
Same here. I'm with that too. I'm in the same boat.
But I love both those. And 100%, like especially people who are getting into comedy now, they're going to see people like Dave Chappelle, and that will be an inspiration to them. There's so many clever writers. One thing I'll say this, man, this is something I did notice, okay? Now, I don't watch a lot of stand-up on Netflix. I don't watch a whole lot of it because I always get worried about I don't want your jokes to pollute my jokes.
Same here.
You know, so... But there was, I've seen specials and I'm like, haha, that was good. I really enjoyed that. And then a year later, they got another special. And I'm kind of like, damn, you done cranked that a whole new hour? Let's watch it. You know, and so, I mean, it's a little different because, you know, back in the day when you had, you know, at Pryor, you know, Pryor cranked out some gold mines, bro. And
yes, he did. Yes, he did.
They were just boom. And then Carlin in the day, George Carlin cranked out some gold mines.
Oh, gee, man. Legend. And
so those dudes, but now there's many more platforms. There's many more platforms for comics. It's interesting. Let me ask you this, coming from somebody who, and I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but I want your opinion on this. I definitely want your opinion on this because I kind of have, I don't want to be the get off my line old man opinion, but I just think this is true. You know, we talked about Dave Chappelle talking about the trans issue in America. And he was brilliantly able to talk about that because he's Dave Chappelle. Now, one of the biggest mistakes that I see beginning comics make is they hop up on stage and they start talking about issues, joking about issues that you're not good enough yet to talk about those issues. And there may be a chance you may never be good enough to talk about those issues. And that's okay. That's okay. Because not everybody needs to hear to talk about abortion or talk about, you know, even race or even, you know, some of these things, you know, it's okay. You don't need to talk about that. Move on. Now, because you get these comics and stuff, they think they have to shock the audience. And they think, you know, I'm sorry, but if you're a 22-year-old white dude up there talking about abortion, don't.
It's not a good look, dog. It's not a good look.
And also, something else I want to say, you know, we talked about, now I haven't seen this. I would lose my mind, but I don't know. You guys been into some open mics more than I have here lately, but there was an uptick in like these young comics getting up and I would hear it in the groups. Like, you know, if you're saying the N word, don't. Who does that?
Yeah. I've been in a room where that's happened before. I legit have been in a room where that's happened before. I was just hearing a story about the other night about that happened at another club. I'm like, that's never a good idea.
Who does that?
Shock, I guess everybody wants to do that shock value thing, man. They see these celebrities, you know, what they do, and they figure that they can emulate that. But these celebrities have worked hard to get to a certain level to be able to do what they do. You haven't.
I mean, it takes, okay, now I always tell this story, and I never was a, now don't get me wrong, in my show, I don't talk about a lot of politics. Really, I don't. When you come see my show, I want you to forget that crap. You know what I mean? I want you to forget about mm-hmm. that and let's go somewhere else. I always tell this story because there are levels of comics that can talk about issues and make you laugh. And it may be things that you didn't think you could laugh at. I never was a big Doug Stanhope fan, but I saw he had his big cult following. You know how them Doug Stanhope fans are.
I know a few around here, man. Yeah. And when he comes to town, they are packing out.
Yes. Well, I remember I was like, what is the deal with Doug, man? Why do people love him so much? So I watched one of the specials that he did, and the man got me to laugh. I mean, bust out laughing at his mother's death.
Wow.
Normally, you that ain't funny. What's funny right. about somebody's mama dying?
Right.
Well, he's talking about how they were all gathered around and, you know, and she was giving her last words. And somehow, because she had some type of terminal disease and she had a suicide pill she could take, that way she wouldn't suffer. Well, he's like, we gave her the pill. And as soon as we gave her the pill, you know, we were having a good time to the very end. And I looked at her and I was like, oh, my God, Mom, they found a cure. And then here's another thing I gotta throw a shout out to Doug Stanhope is if you go see his, like, I know you know the show on Comedy Central, I can't believe this is happening, you know what I'm talking about?
I
think it's Ari Shaffir's thing. Go watch Doug tell his story. He will get you to laugh. I'm just gonna tell you flat out, be prepared. Okay. He's going to get you to laugh at another man dying in the street. Some dude dying in the street, you're going to laugh at it.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna take that out, man. I gotta see how you put a spin on that.
But see, the thing is though, not everybody can do that. And that's what I think comics need to realize. Don't let that be your goal. Don't let that to go up to try to shock people. You know, I ain't never gonna talk about abortion. I ain't never gonna talk about rape. I ain't gonna talk about those things. You know?
Same. And I think, you know, with the comics, when they come in, man, they spend their time, you know, looking at all these other, you know, celebrities, and they spend all their time trying to be them that they don't even feel comfortable being themselves, you know? I'm never going to be anybody on stage that I wouldn't be in my own life off stage, man. So, I'm with you. There are certain subjects I stay away from. I'm never going to touch them, and that's just how it's going to go. Politics and religion are also added to that, and, you know, in certain regards and things like that. So, you know, you gotta know your crowd, man, know your content, but also know the stuff that's going to offend people.
Absolutely. Dumb man, dude. I agree with you 100%. But let's do this too, because yeah, I can get rambling too. I geek out on comedy, bro. Comedy and magic. Here. Comedy and magic are my two things that I can geek out on. And I could talk forever. But let's do this. Okay. Every episode of the Abracadabra podcast, Mr. Don Garrett, especially comics, we got to hear a good hell gig story. Let's hear one.
Oh man. Okay. All right. So it was my first time getting booked as a feature. And it was for this show called Laugh It Up Thursday, which was ran by Tone X. Shout out to Uncle Tone, man. He's absolutely amazing. And so I was gonna be featuring for Marvin Hunter that night. And Danny, I got in my head, man. I had some, you know, new material, and that's why I messed up. I started off my set with the new material instead of doing what I was normally doing. So I get into it with the heckler, man. This guy comes on stage and he is literally kicking my butt in a roast contest, man. And this is around the time that thing happened to Steve Brown at the Comedy House down in Columbia. So, nah, man, I bombed Danny. I bombed, man. My cousin was there. I bombed in front of my cousin and some more people that came out to see me. And, you know, when I was there, the people, as they were walking out, they just kind of looked at me like and walked off, man. So I was driving home, man. I was devastated. I was just like, comedy is just not gonna be my thing. And lo and behold, my really good friend Evan Pitfield, as a millennial, you know, of course, what do? We've been to Facebook. That's what I did. And so my good friend Evan Pitfield called me, man, and talked me off the ledge. And here I sit today because, you know, he called and gave me that chat, man. But you talk about embarrassing, Danny. That's still my biggest bomb to date. Like, that's bigger than Hiroshima and Nagasaki combined, bro.
You know, okay. So first of all, let me talk about this. So it was a heckler and they got up on stage?
Got up on stage. I mean, I might have invited him up there, Danny. I'm just saying, allegedly, I might have invited, because, you know, you're testing me as a man now. Like, yeah. You know, I got the microphone and you're yelling out stuff and, oh no, I got to shut this guy down. I got to get this room back. And he was like, man, don't make me come on that stage. I was like, come on the stage. He came on the stage and it could have went way left, man. It could have gotten ugly, violent. You know, you just don't know. So looking back on that, man, that was a bonehead mistake. And I mean, that's a mistake that you have to make as a young comic to learn from that. And every time I think of, I celebrate the anniversary every year.
That's great. You know, man, and that's so true, dude, because I think I've got stories, bomb stories, mistakes, you know, especially with a heckler. I mean, especially when I'm open mic days, I made a bad mistake with a heckler.
Oh,
you know, so I mean, it's just, and I mean, then I thought I was cool, but when I look back, I'm like, I shouldn't have done that. I would have handled this a lot different, you know. And you know, dude, you learn, and there's no really one way how to handle a heckler, because it's different. There's different types of hecklers, and you sound like you had the creme de la creme of the nightmare.
Oh man, did I? Man, I had he was terrible, the worst heckler I've still ever seen. But when we were in Bristol the other night, man, there was a good heckler, And you have to, you know, kind of learn the difference. You know, with bad hecklers, you know, you kind of have to, you have to like kind of put them in their place. You know, good hecklers can be annoying, but they don't mean any harm. So you can gently kind of, you know, get them to quiet down or something like that. Or sometimes, you know, you can play with them and that kind of raises the show as well. You know, when you can play off of that. Yeah. When you, you know, so as again, just performing, knowing when they go in and diagnose the room. You know, just knowing, being able to decipher, is this person trying to harm me or can we, you know, work this out? So yeah, man, the more you perform, you'll be able to see it.
And you know, you're so, I got two quick little heckler stories I want to tell real quick.
Yeah.
I had one heckler story. This was a few years ago. This dumb, I don't want to say dumb. I mean,
no, they dumb.
Anyways, they thought they was helping the show, one of those kind of hecklers, and they were too drunk to realize that I was even making fun of them anyways, but the rest of the room knew, they were laughing, you know, but instead of like being mean and shutting him down, I kept him at bay, you know, kept him at bay every now and then, bam, bam, I play with him a little bit, you know, and then afterwards, he was so drunk, he wound up buying 12 t-shirts. So,
exactly. It worked out for you, bro. It worked out for you.
Exactly. So I was like, you know, I mean, sometimes you gotta hand him. If I would have shut him down and pissed him off, he wouldn't buy no shirts. So,
right. But you got 12 sales off for one person.
He woke up the next day and was like, what am I doing with all these Danny Whitson shirts? You know, he didn't know what he
was. Hey, you just like, yeah.
But the latest heckler story, I got to tell this one. I tell this one on shows now. I'm even thinking about telling this in my show. Talk about a good heckler. All right. This was a good heckler. I was doing this private show and I'm sitting there doing it, but there's this bit that I tell. It's a ghost story / fart joke. It's just kind of what it is. All right.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there telling this bit and it's killing. I mean, they're dying laughing. They're loving it. Dude in the front row, and he's this Indian dude. He's fell out of his seat. He's rolling on the floor laughing. I'm just kind of like, damn, it ain't that funny, but all right, you know? You know, yeah. I mean, he's laughing. Well, then he stands up, shushes the whole room. He goes, shh, shh, shh. I, too, have a ghost story.
Oh, no.
The loudest part, dude. I had ever heard. I thought dude's roof was going to fly off. People started laughing. The room just died after that, dude. I mean, so it took that bit to another level. I got heckled by that guy's butthole, man. First time. Yeah. That was, and I just had to go with it. I was just like, dang, yeah, man.
But as a comedian, man, as a professional, you were able to pivot and make that moment huge for you, Danny. Like, bro, kudos to you for being able to recognize that, brother.
Well, yeah, I thought this is a gold mine. I'm running with this.
So, yeah, man, what? Yeah. Take it to the house.
So, and sometimes, you know, the audience, the hecklers will give you those gems, you know.
They will. So, they will. Free of charge, too.
Absolutely. You will get those little gems, and you're like, oh, that was funny, dude. I'm taking that right there. I'll take that. You know?
Thank you. So, appreciate that. Yeah.
But no, you are absolutely correct, man. And it sounds like Charlotte is blessed to have you in there teaching them with a comedy, you know, game. Because, man, you definitely know what you're talking about. 100% you know what you're talking about.
Thank you, brother. I am blessed to have the city, these wonderful people here, the citizens, man. I'm blessed to just be in Charlotte, to be a part of this comedy scene, and just to be able to, you know, have some kind of influence to be able to steer things in the right direction here, man. So I'm blessed to be able to be in this position.
Well, let's do this, Don, man. Here we go. Ah. Every guest on the Abracadam podcast.
Yeah, what we got?
We get to see a magic trick. All right,
here we go.
Now, I got to do. We're gonna do some mind read. We're gonna get inside. Want to get inside your head and redecorate. Here we go.
Okay.
All right. What I got here? What I want you to do? I want you to think of one of those cards. Don't name it. Just think it. Get it inside your head.
Okay.
All right, you got it. Now keep in mind,
I got it.
They can't see us; they can only hear us. All right, so they're going to hear the magic take place. All right, here we go. So you got it?
I got it.
All right, cool. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to lose the cards in the deck here. All right, here we go. I'm going to try to cut the deck. I'm going to try to cut to your card.
Okay.
I've cut right here. All right, I'm okay. Obligated. Don, I can't get out of this. You see this? I'm obligated. I have cut right here. Now, Don, for the first time, for the Abracadam listeners, I want you to tell them what was the name of the card you were only thinking of.
The card I was thinking of was the Ten of Diamonds.
Ten of Diamonds. First time. Check it out.
First time. Wait a minute, man. Wait, bro. Yo, that's nuts, man. That was really, I know y'all can hear this. It was really the Ten of Diamonds. I'm not lying.
The Ten of Diamonds, man. There we go.
Yo, amazing job, brother. Oh, I don't know how you did that, man. That was crazy.
I tell you what, let's do this real quick. Let me ask you a question. Thank you. Thank you. I want to ask you this real quick. Because I always try to throw these out here. I want to think of a good one. Do you believe in conspiracy theories?
Of course.
Okay. Now, here, you know, conspiracy theories have all changed nowadays because some of them got a little crazy, you know, these flat earthers and all this QAnon crap, you know.
The Kyrie Irving.
That's crazy,
isn't it? yeah, it is, man. It's nuts. That's just crazy how crazy it is, man. The Kyrie Irvings of the world.
Let's do this. If there was a conspiracy theory, though, about Don Garrett, what would it be?
Man, you know what? The conspiracy theory about Don Garrett is that he is this super duper happy-go-lucky, extroverted, going out, you know, in public, everywhere, all the time, fun-loving dude at all times of his life. That's the conspiracy theory. The truth is, I am just as introverted as I am extroverted. I'm out at shows and things like that. Just as much as I enjoy that, I enjoy being in the comfort of my living room playing my Xbox.
Well, you know what, Don? I got to say this, man. You got one of those I'm happy faces, even when you ain't even smiling. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, it's the cheekbones, man. Got it from my mama, man. Shout outs to my mama. I got the cheekbones from that side of the family, man. Shout out to my mama for these, man.
There you go, man. There we go. Well, then let me ask you this. Here's another one. If you could travel in time, okay, and you only have one trip, would you go to the future or would you go to the past? And if you could go, what year would you go? Either way.
Oh, man, I would go back to the past, and I would go back to the year 2007. I was just graduating high school and entering my freshman year at Virginia State University.
Would you do anything different?
Would not. Would do it all, man. Would do it all the same way, because I feel like that's how everything I did from the mile to the while made me who I am today. So I'll do it all the same way.
Dude, that's an awesome answer, brother. I tell you what, Don, man, dude, this has been a blast. Where can the Abracadam listeners learn more about you? Where can they see a show? Let's hear it.
My next show is actually this Tuesday night at the Comedy Zone. Shout out to Debbie Millwater. We're doing a night of 1,000 laughs, man. So that's going to be great. You can check out my website, www.dlgcomedy.com. Also, social media at Don Garrett Comedy. Check out our class schedule. Check out the great things that CCT has going on. And also, make sure y'all support, man, Danny Whitson, support the Abracadam podcast. And man, listen, Danny is awesome and amazing at what he does, man. Make sure y'all support. I thank you, bro.
Hey, man, thank you for the shout-out, Don. And we got to get you on here, man. And we got to get you out to Knoxville sometime, brother. Absolutely.
Hey, I'll come on out to the volunteer country.
Nice. All right, Don, man, thanks for coming on the Abracadam, dude. This has been a blast.
Hey, thank you, brother. I appreciate you having me. Thanks, y'all.
All right, I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with stand-up comedian Don Garrett. He's a very funny dude, and I highly recommend, if you guys are anywhere in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, be sure to check out one of his shows. If not, go on YouTube. Check out some of his clips. He's got some good clips on YouTube. I do need to give a show date, April 9th, Morristown, Tennessee, 1907 Brewery. I'm going to be there. I'm bringing my funny friend Lance Adams with me. If you get a chance, come out and see this show. It is going to be hilarious. Also, if you guys have not done so yet, be sure to like, subscribe, follow to the Abracadam podcast wherever it is you listen to podcasts. We are on every platform there is. If you're on Podbean, give me a follow on Podbean. That'd be great. I'm on Instagram at Super Magic Boy on Instagram. Give me a follow there. That would be fantastic. I want to give a big shout out to the state of Illinois. A lot of listens coming out of that state. So whoever you guys are, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.
It's awesome.
Will you please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party?
Then you got a freaking miracle. There you go.